of applause for our warm-up speaker, JC.
Hi, I am a real alcoholic, and my name is JC. And I'm a warm-up speaker, so I guess my job is to get everybody riled up, irritated, and offended before the main speaker comes up. And I'm pretty good at that. If I haven't offended everybody by the time I'm done, see me after the meeting. My goal is not to offend anybody. I'm not here to tell anybody what to do, how to do it. I'm just here to tell you what I had to do to get sober. I said I was a real alcoholic, and all that means is that, when I took that first drink, I could not control how much I drank afterwards, and I didn't have the ability to not drink even when I didn't want to. So those two things made me a real alcoholic, and I didn't understand that, you know. I want to thank Bob for having me do this. I've been sober 23 years. My sobriety day is April 19th, 1992. And my sponsor trained me early on. And I'm not telling you anybody else has to do this. This is what I was trained to do. He told me that any kind of commitment that I make in AA is a sacred duty and it's a sacred honor. And that that no matter what happens, I show up and do that duty, you know, if I commit. And I have to move heaven and hell to make sure that happens. And if for some reason I can't do that, then I'm gonna make sure somebody knows and hopefully a replacement. But that's how I was taught, you know. And I had a pretty good sponsor, Rick R. from Poway, down in North San Diego County. He was my sponsor for the first 4 years, and I changed sponsor. Rick is, everybody in Poway knows Rick. He now has 50 years sobriety. He had about 26 when I first met him. And a wonderful man. But he told me that early on, he sat me down and said, you know, you are not a man of your word. And that stung. And he told me he was going to say a lot of things that stung, because he told me, he said, I have to be honest with you. If I'm going to sponsor you, I have to be honest with you. Are you okay with that? That didn't sound good. You know? But I told him, yeah. But then he starts saying things like that. He says, you are not a man of your word. And I'd already been a lot of things by then. You know, I was 42 years old when I got sober. I'd been to college. I dropped out of high school. I'd been to college later on, you know. I went to prison. Later on, I went to, got in the military. You know, I went back and forth in all kinds of things, you know. Good guy, bad guy. Didn't know what I was. You know, one thing that was always consistent was my drinking. But, you know, I thought of myself as one way, and other people saw me differently, you know, in almost every category of my life. And but when he explained that to me, that you are not a man of your word. You say you're going to do shit, and then you don't follow through, you know. And I thought about that. I knew he was right. You know, it stung, and I didn't like it, but it was the truth. And, you know, and I thank God for the people of Alcoholics Anonymous, because there were certain people that were willing to tell me the truth. And I needed to hear the truth, you know. They said, he told me, you know, I'm not trying to hurt you. That's not the point. The point is, I'm trying to help you. This is a serious disease you've got. You have alcoholism, you know, on your own, you're not going to recover, you know, I'm trying to save your life. You know, this isn't about saving your face. This is about saving your ass. This is a Save Your Ass program. That's how he explained it to me, you know. So, I started drinking when I was around 13, 14 years old. Like I said, right away, from the very first drink, I was one of those guys that could not control how much I took afterwards. Once the booze crossed my lip, man, all I thought about was more. And I never did not drink like that. I always drank like that from day one. And I was the same way with other substances, too. So, more was, you know, I've often heard, you know, more was my thing of choice, and that was mine, you know. And early on, maybe I could have quit drinking. You know, as the book talks about, maybe I could have quit drinking, but I didn't want to. You know, why? Why would I want to drink? Every now and then I had some pretty serious consequences, and I would not drink for X amount of time. But, you know, there's other stuff. You know, the big book, Bill W. and Dr. Bob, both of them in their stories, you know, they talk about using other substances to control their drinking. Like Dr. Bob talks about, he used sedatives for 17 years so he wouldn't drink in the morning. You know, I had to use other stuff. I found that other substances could help me control my booze. I could drink for much longer and not have a blackout on certain stuff. You know, I'm sure some people are familiar with that. Sometimes I did other stuff so I wouldn't start drinking because I knew that if I start drinking, I wasn't going to stop drinking. You know, so if I start drinking, you know, early in the day, not much was going to happen, and I was going to more or less go kind of crazy. And so I would do other stuff, you know, to control it so I could drink. And that's just part of my story, and it's part of a lot of people's story, I think. But I am a real alcoholic, and by the time I got my first taste of AA, October 17th, 1984, and I absolutely loved AA. I came here kicking and screaming. I was in Houston, Texas, and my ex-wife W3, she made me go, and I didn't want to go, but I got there and I liked it. I liked it. I've been trying to control my drinking for a long time. I'm not that type of guy that had not been trying to control my drinking. I'm that type of guy they talk about in the big book in chapter 3 where they say all these different ways people are trying to control and enjoy their drinking. That was me. And I'm in that ad infinitum list. I tried 1,000 things inside there, you know. I'm the guy that was constantly making pledges or to myself or to others, you know, trying to control it, you know, whatever. And I couldn't do it. But you know, when I came to AA that first time, for the first time I was around a lot of people who were saying they were alcoholic. I'd never been around a lot of people that said they were alcoholic, and they were also seemed kind of happy, and it seemed like a great support system. And that's what I looked at AA as, you know, a great support system. Go to meetings, get support, and that's it. And I didn't really care about the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I certainly didn't care about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't care about the traditions. I didn't care about any of the stuff that so many people know is so important to Alcoholics Anonymous. I cared about, you know, I thought of it as some kind of bastardized group therapy, you know, and that's what I did. But, and I still had a lot of rebel in me, even though I liked AA. And I stayed sober for quite a number of years after that, about 5.5 years. But right from the very beginning, they told me 90 meetings in 90 days. I went to 89 meetings and then skipped the meeting. And I just wanted to do it. They were telling me to read the big book. I didn't want to read it. You know, I've always been a rebel. I'm still a rebel today. It's just the way I am. The only thing I'm not very rebellious about is this program of Alcoholics Anonymous today. But, you know, I wouldn't really... I did the steps, you know, the first time. Didn't do a very good job. Certainly wasn't fearless and searching in my fourth step, you know. I don't remember ever doing 6 and 7, you know, asking God to remove all my defects of character. I don't remember that, you know, so I don't remember those steps being there. In AA, 5.5 years, didn't remember that, you know. That's kind of odd. I didn't remember step 11, you know, praying for knowledge of God's will and the power to carry that out. I don't remember that, you know. I don't remember step 12, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. We try to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. I don't remember any of that stuff. You know, that wasn't stuff I was doing. You know, I was going to AA meetings and I learned the basic lingo and I thought that was all you needed to do, come in there and talk AA crap, you know, first things first, one day at a time, live and let live, you know, those kind of things, you know, and those are valuable things. But, you know, after 5.5 years, I thought my wife would be really proud of me for being sober 5.5 years. She wanted a divorce. So, I guess I wasn't doing a very good program. So we ended up getting a divorce. And it was kind of ugly, you know, because she thought she was divorced before we were divorced. And that kind of pissed me off. So, and I relapsed, you know, because I had no foundation. I hadn't done the steps. I hadn't had a psychic change. I was just going to meetings. And then I was out there for about a year. Then I tried to come back in, and man, it was tough. It was really tough getting back into AA because the stuff that I'd done before didn't work. And I was going in and out, in and out, in and out, using a lot, coming into AA. But finally, April 19th, 1992, I was done. I was willing to go to any length. And I came into that Poway Alano Club, and I got that guy as my sponsor because I knew he was a take-no-prisoners type of sponsor, you know. He could see right through me, you know. He knew that I was full of shit. He knew that I was a phony. He knew that I wasn't a man of my word. He knew that I needed some serious help. I needed the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. He understood this, you know. And he worked with me, and I started doing this thing for once, you know. And damn, I'm glad I did. Jesus Christ, this is a good program. And maybe, you know, maybe for some of you guys, maybe just going to meetings works. I don't know, you know. I'm not here to tell anybody what else to do, you know. I don't know what you're supposed to do. I know what I had to do. And today, you know, I'm a big fan of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Huge fan of that book. I'm in that book on every page. I love that book. I've studied that book since... quite a number of years now, and the more I read it, the more I realize how true it is, you know. It is the truth, you know. And there's a line that I just absolutely love. At certain times, the alcoholic has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Neither he nor any other human power can provide such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. You know, that's how I arrived. I had no effective mental defense against the first drink. I could not stop taking that first drink, and once I took that first drink, I was off and running, getting in a lot of trouble. And I remember one of my last drunks was in San Diego. I'd gotten a DUI about 5 or 6 weeks earlier, and I'm out riding around at 3 o'clock in the morning. I pull over on the to the center lane on I-5 at 3 in the morning to adjust my radio, you know, and got squad cars behind me, didn't even notice them until they were knocking on the window, lights were all over the place, that's how drunk I was, and I'm in a Jeep convertible, you know, in January. And I get arrested, and I get taken in, and I'm in the downtown drunk tank in San Diego, and a whole bunch of other drunks, and low life, and I fit right in, and I'm sitting there all night thinking, man, I'm going to quit drinking. I'm done. I'm done drinking. This can't happen again. I just got a DUI. I was a high school dropout. Those 5.5 years I was sober, I'd gone back to college and got a couple degrees, and I knew I just ruined that career. Got 2 DUIs. I couldn't drive. Didn't have a driver's license. I knew I couldn't work in that field. I'm sitting there all night long, all night from 3 to 5, 3 to 8, 5 hours. But totally committed to sobriety, totally bleeding that I'm going to never drink again. And I knew for a fact I was never going to drink again. I'm getting out of here. I'm straightening up. And they let me out at 8 o'clock in the morning on PR, personal recognizance. And I walked out of there, and I had my Jeep right down the street, about 10 minutes away. I walked over to where my Jeep was. I got in that Jeep. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. It's like a Tuesday morning. It's happening on like a Monday night. And I get in that Jeep. And I know I'm never drinking again. And I got about 5 minutes down the road, and there was a 7-Eleven. I stopped at that 7-Eleven, and I got two big tall boys in paper bags. I'm driving down through 8 o'clock in the morning, rush traffic in San Diego on Highway 15, headed north, drinking this beer out of this bag, and nothing looks more like alcohol than a tall boy in a brown paper bag. Just got out for DUI. I could not stop. I had no effective mental defense. And that for me, it was, that's where it led me to. It took me a while even after that, but I haven't had to do that. I've had an effective mental defense for 23 and a half years. That's absolutely amazing. I don't fight alcohol at all. I make no promises. I just thank my higher power for my sobriety. I never, ever fight alcohol or any of that other stuff. I leave that fight to God. God does all my heavy work on that, you know. And I'm a non-believer. I'm a completely non-religious person. I don't have a religious bone in my body, and if I find one, I'm plucking it out and throwing it away. You know, but I have found a power greater than myself through this program that I totally trust and rely on, you know, that I'm totally comfortable on. I might be totally uncomfortable with cherries, you know, Rick's, but I'm totally comfortable with the spirit of the universe that I found in this program. And I believe in it 100%, and it's been there for me 100%. And I believe it's the same that we all have. That's how I look at it, you know. And I found that through practicing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you very much.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if you take your seats, I'd appreciate it. Let's give a warm welcome to our featured speaker, Bob.
Okay, hi, folks. Honestly, really don't know what I'm going to say. So, you know, JC, thank you for warming things up. And I did one of these before, and I wrote all kinds of copious notes down, and, you know, like an outline. And I, 5 minutes into it, like, oh, God. I was off course. And so this time, he just said, it's your story. Can't be wrong. You know, what happened, the junk you did, and what's it like now? Oh, okay, I can probably do that. And the last five, you know, get into it, and we hear these magnificent speakers, and, you know, man, this guy should, you know, he should be speaking in front of millions, and you're not going to be amazed tonight. I'll tell you that right now. Hey, I'm not here to be a comedian, because, as my lovely wife will say, I'm not. So it's just my job to just tell you my story. A lot of folks keep specifics out, but and when I get to the specifics, where I used to be general, it's because my story, it made a difference in how I became an alcoholic. As I stand here right now, I have no doubt that I'm an alcoholic. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind. And that took a lot of years, where some of you can maybe relate to that. So, I'm from the Midwest. I would just usually just say the Midwest, but we have some Wisconsin Midwesterners, so I'll just say Indiana, and more specifically, Hoosiers, yeah, somewhere else. And I had all kinds of, you know, great parents. They're both still alive now. They're both still together. We talked to them just yesterday. They're still back there. And everyone's lives are formed by their, you know, their families and their own specific set of circumstances. Mine was good. I mean, middle class, blue collar, living in a small town in Indiana. Mom didn't drink, or just very socially. And Dad drank a lot. I mean, but he had a big group. Everyone in his group did. Factory workers, farmers. And so I grew up going on hunting and fishing expeditions with these guys. That was great. And he would, they had this little bottle of schnapps. And carrying that thing on his back, and that was my first, you know, exposure to alcohol. He said, hey, you want a snort? There's always a snort. I mean, I didn't know what a snort was, but the guys would just up like that, and I don't know how old I was, but it was like a rite of passage. I know it burned, and it was just a sip. It was like a once-a-year deal. But I wasn't looking for more. Brought this here. If anyone knows CPR,
Do you need water, really?
I'll be all right. I'm going to be all right. You know, I've been at meetings with half you guys. I know you, a lot of you, really well. I got my sponsor back there, backing me up here, Bob T, his lovely bride. And thanks for coming. And a lot of the guys I've been to so many meetings with, and my favorite wife. She's by far my favorite. Yeah, somewhere along the line, I became a serial marrier. And that's not funny. I didn't get any DUIs. Man, trust me, that's a lot more expensive. That's a lot more expensive. But I got some sobriety, and I am just blessed to have her in my life tonight and at all times. So thank you for being here. And we were provided dinner by Rick and his lovely Anna. Oh man, I'm still relishing that. And I got some take home to get back to. Thanks again, Rick. Where was I? Somewhere back in Indiana. So as I grew up, and I'd sneak out a warm beer, you know, every once in a while, and God, that's just terrible. And I'd split it with two or three of the guys, and there was no effect, and the taste was terrible. And I think, how do these guys drink this crap? So I went through and get a little older, so I'm starting to see these guys around the campfire in Honey Camp. And it looks like a skit from Saturday Night Live. I mean, you know, literally, it looks like they're going overboard, but it's not. It's how it was. I mean, they're sitting on cases of beer around the fire, and I mean, every once in a while, someone would, at night, grab the other guy's hat, yell pull, and someone, serious stuff. Like, and I'm like, whoa. I'm going to stay away from this alcohol thing. You know, I mean, every once in a while they'll get wrestling around and like roll through the fire and they're laughing and then you go back and some more gunplay, go back in the woods like, and these were the stable guys. So I decided then I'm going to be a non-drinker. So being the square peg in a round hole, like I feel like I became, started early when I didn't drink, when normal people drank. I mean, high school, didn't drink. Went to 1 year at Purdue. Didn't drink on a college campus, no one around. I was, you know, drinking milk and going to the gym. What a nerd, man. And the guys were, you know, in the dorms. I was in the dorm, and so, of course, as those of you been at the university, so I go to pledge week, and you know where they put the guys that aren't going to make it to the house. You know, I go in, and I find myself in a little room with, man, these guys are nerds. Like, I mean, here I am. And they found out in the first couple minutes that I don't drink, you know, and I'm pretty straight and narrow. Like, oh, someone of the other fraternity guys will be with you in a minute. And they take you to this place, and you're there for the rest of the night till you figure out, oh, this is the reject door. So at a place where you should be drinking, I wasn't. So but I'm not studying a lot. You know, I'm getting okay grades. But the last semester, I pulled a couple of D's, and I got into it with Dad. And I'm not going to pay for this. Of course, you know, they're paying for a Big Ten University 4-year degree. And I said, oh, okay, I'll show them. I'll join the Marine Corps. And I showed them. I walked away from the degree and to the yellow footprints, which ended up being one of the better things I've ever done. We've got a couple of jarheads in the room, so you guys, we just celebrated 240 years. Hoorah! So that was one of the good things. But I also, I got ranked pretty well, and but after hours, guys would go do what guys in the service and particularly guys in the Marine Corps would do, go drink copious amounts of alcohol. Not me. I would go run or go lift weights or go watch PBS, you know, the Nature Channel. Again, what a nerd. But I was, at the point, though, I was really driven, really goal-driven to make rank. And then, you know, the next step there was get my time in. And then I got kind of hooked going to classes to get a little degree, my associate's degree, because I left the other one back in Indiana undone. So I went to a community college to get what I wanted to do, and I kind of got off track, was I've always loved animals, you know, and the nature. Be a game warden. Well, once I started going there, the instructors were LAPD, LA County Sheriff's, and then I got hooked. And that's where the specifics of it, well, you know, there's some meetings I would not share that with, like big city Alano clubs. I'm not going to say that sort of thing. Because a lot of us have had run-ins with the law. Well, that shaped me. That's my story. So I bought into that, you know, law and order and truth and justice and all that. But I watched The Lone Ranger and Superman, all in black and white, all those black and white heroes, they always won, you know. So I thought I'd do my time, I went back, I did my Marine Corps time down in El Toro, in the southern part of the state, and then went back to the Hoosier Land, and got on as a state trooper down there. And I mean, caught on to that quite quick. And my number one target, after we did all the accidents and wrote the tickets and took all the other calls, was I like to arrest drunk drivers. And I did. Hundreds. I don't know how many. But I would specifically go out hunting for them, because early on I found the mayhem created. I mean, I'm picking up the dead bodies, and it just, I became inflamed. It became my enemy. That's my story. You know, I keep saying that, well, you know, because in some places you tell that, well, let's just wait for this guy to come out, you know, after the meeting, and we'll give him a little thanks for for his citizen stuff. But so I led the district many months, and was on the fast track and the career wise, and early on was asked to go back as an instructor at the academy. That was just, I loved it. But the job, and I still wasn't drinking. But my other issue had surfaced, and I was married at the time, and my first two kids. And I'll go with W-1. JC alluded to numbering them, and I had to resort to that. I bought into marriage and family. And the kids, I love the kids, but the one woman at a time issue, one? No. And so, that was my other issue. And you can only do that so long, you know, before the bottom falls out. So the bottom was falling out, and we used my time at the academy as a trial separation. I thought, oh, this is great. I can go up here and just play, you know, do whatever.
And then we'll go back, patch things up. I'll stick with her because of the kids, blah, 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 blah. Halfway through, did I go back? It was a go there, stay there academy. And I was like Mr. Buy the Book DI kind of guy. Yeah, loved it. But when about halfway through this long academy, I said, so we'll have to figure out when I get back, you know, maybe go to a counselor or whatever. She goes, oh no. You know, you want a trial separation? Let's just go get a divorce. Like, no, that wasn't part of the plan. So, you know, it was just supposed to be a little vacation time away from you, and where I could go play. And she said, no, I kind of like my freedom. So, you know, then came the crying and gnashing of teeth. And, because then I thought, my kids? I mean, it wasn't for her. Like, this still really wasn't for her. It was like, oh. Because I talked, by that time, the other cops, most of them were half were divorced at least, and talking about child support, not seeing their kids, being away from their kids. Like, man, I can't be away from my kids. He said, oh, we're going to do that. So I went to some of the older guys and said, what you need to do is get a buddy and a bottle of Jack Daniels. So, well, I don't drink. He says, you'll learn. And I'm thinking, man, this stuff is terrible. Yeah. A couple years back, we went up for the DUI class, and you partner up with somebody. One day, one guy drinks a measured amount of either beer, wine, or liquor. And then the other guy tests you periodically as you go along. And they could, there was an option out, but my partner, Ray Jarrett, he's a normie, he won't care if I guess. You know, I don't know, raised alive or dead yet, but he said, no, you got to do this. Or how else are you going to know? And he made a point. How are you going to know? So it was like, if you don't drink, how are you going to know what's going on with these guys? So I don't know how much it was, but enough to test 0.10 at that time. Probably that first little bit got me buzzed like crazy. So that was really the first time I really got, I guess you'd say, drunk. And that was my, and that I know, I remembered I did not like the taste of that alcohol. Yeah, that's why I knew I didn't like Jack Daniels. another thing I learned, I really learned to like Jack Daniels. So I did. I mean, by then I thought I had a lot of friends, but by my twisted self-centeredness, for me, I mean, I was already an alcoholic. Just adding alcohol made it come to fruition. But I was already, and I really like to try to watch my language, but I because I was ended up using the F-bomb left and right all the time, and to me, it doesn't show much growth for me. So I try not to use that, rather than say, I was a first-class asshole without the alcohol. Just self-centered, my time. And so by that time, when I thought I had a lot of friends, I really didn't. I'd already probably pushed most of them away, so I didn't have a friend to get. So I started drinking. I got the fifth of Jack Daniels, and I found a way to get it down over a couple of days. But I would bear in mind, I'm still at the academy as an instructor. Not a good time to start drinking. Remember that the movie Airplane, where I picked the wrong day to start smoking dope or sniffing glue or doing heroin. It was a bad time to start drinking. So I went from straight-laced drill instructor to what's he doing? I mean, I went into the gym. Everyone's at attention. The other instructors walking in, and I killed the lights. And as kind of the kind of lights that if you kill them, they're dead. You can't turn them right back on. They kind of, I don't know what you call them, but Lieutenant said, that's just so childish. I mean, in front of everybody. I mean, I was coming apart like a cheap suit. And I had, you know, all this work to this career was just going down the drain in front of the whole class, the staff. And at that point, all I was starting to be concerned with, and this was like three quarters of the way through, I just get through this academy. It's just, I was starting to drink every night. The FOP, Fraternal Order Police, was a quarter mile within walking distance from the building. I'd be walking down there every night for those last couple of weeks. Where before I had been in the training room watching films or procedures and doing push-ups on, you know, just real nerd stuff. So that was out the window. I say all this because it's my story, and the academy graduation, and then all the brasses there. I mean, the superintendent, captains, you name it. I got just blasted drunk and started dancing with one of the female cadets and not in a very PG way, you know, out there. Yeah, it wasn't good. And it got towards the end of the evening, and my brother and I, who's 5 years younger, hadn't really done that much carousing around together, but he was somehow he had driven me there, so he was my ride. And he told me, he said, okay, we're ready to go. He had come with a bunch of his college buddies and made a pass in front of them too. He was already embarrassed. And the cadet I was dancing with, she says, oh, don't worry about it, I'll take him home, or he's coming home with me. And I'm like, okay, you know, bad decision. That was a bad decision. But I was so drunk. That's my story. That's what, it led me to, you know, went there. It was a couple days before graduation. So I was graduated and they went their way, and I went back to the old district. And then transferred back to Indianapolis just to be away from the divorce situation down in the smaller district. And things were going fine. But I was now one of the guys, one of the, you know, off duty. We get off work and we go to someone's house, or, you know, if we're with a keg. The drink was going, and it was fun. Nothing was happening. Well, about almost a year after the academy, I get a call from IA. And said that we got a case on you. For what? I mean, I didn't take any kickbacks. I was, you know, I did try to do everything by the book. So, he told me the cadet was going to be fired, and she said the reason she wasn't getting the job then. So they're going to let her go. She said the reason I didn't get my job is because I was put under duress by my supervisor. Put into duress. So I said, should I get representation? You better get a lawyer. And anyway, what I thought would be a black mark on my record became, maybe remember that you know, I've watched way too much TV and way too many movies. I'll reference that. Branded with Chuck Connors, where they march him out in front of the post and they tear his epaulets off. They take his sword and they hand him his broken sword. It was like that. They called me in on duty. And I took my gun and I took the bullets out. They rattled like, I'm crying. My squad sergeant there, he's kind of crying because they all like me. He's got my first sergeant, my lieutenant, who was like, he was my first sergeant in the academy. He was shaking. I mean, these guys were really in my corner. I felt almost as bad for them. And we were all crying in there. And the superintendent made a decision. Boom, get rid of this clown. Instead of a lawsuit. So my identity had been tied up with that badge. I didn't know who I was other than a trooper. Without that, then the divorce was happening. I didn't even have a car. It was a take-home car. She had the car, and my drive-around car was that trooper car. It was gone. So by then, I already hooked up with W number two. That's what I needed during all that was to meet another young next hostage. And so, how are we doing on time? About 3 or 4 more hours? Now this is dragging on. Like, get to it already. Oh, crap. Oh, I better put it in second gear. Okay. So I took another job as a deputy, and then my self-esteem started going, because that's like a notch down back there. I look in the mirror like, I can't do this. I can't do this job anymore. So I did the 2 month other issues thing, smoking some things, and for 2 months that was my entire career. Man, I can't do this. But drinking I can control. This other stuff I can't control. So that, I just went through that little phase and out. So then I had some child support to do. Falling behind on that. Uncle Sam came back to me as garnishment for that. So I was working 2-3 jobs, working 60-70 hours every week, and always just doing this. I mean, I was never catching up to where I was supposed to be. Always behind in payments, and but I always had enough money for booze. All this time our kids were growing up, and I thought I was a good dad. But man, what I robbed from them was time. Time looking for the next drink, getting drunk, chasing the next hostage, and then not knowing what to do once I was in the, again, one woman. I just didn't get that. So the kids moved out to somewhere, Pottyville, Porterville. There, W number one moved there, and I was like 2,000 miles away. After like about a year, I can't do this. So I found after a bunch of odd jobs and drinking through them, I finally got on with Federal Express. Great company. I threw my life, all my energies into that for a while, and I got nothing bad to say about that company. It's a good deal. But I was able to transfer with that company out here. I never heard of the great San Joaquin Valley. And I called the manager, Jim, where's Vizalia? Visalia? He said, it's in the valley. I go, what valley? The great San Joaquin Valley. He really said that. The great, really? Tell me somewhere, farther than Nevada that would hear that. He said, well, right down the road from Fresno. Try somewhere else. I've never heard of Fresno. You never heard of Fresno? He said, right up the road from Bakersfield. Grow up in Indiana, you're required to go to the Indy 500 or watch it or know about it because it's an event. Rick the Rocket won the Indy 500 4 times. Put the whole valley on the map for me. Okay? Well, him and Hee-Haw, Buck Owens. So, now don't encourage me. Yeah, I got laughs coming. That's just, I got nowhere. I told you I'm not going to be funny. My wife will back that up, right? So I moved out here, be with the kids, and I said, okay, I'm going to concentrate on the kids and the job, and then, oh yeah, the Sierras are there. I'll be able to go fishing and hiking and blah. Well, the first day on the job, I met W number three.
The first day on the job. But to my credit, I didn't go after her because she was engaged. And she, like, went after me. Like, oh, come on. So, anyway, I caved in. Mostly because extracurricular activities had another child on the way. So I thought I'd do the gentleman thing. And, you know, that's not, the shotgun wedding's not a way to go. Even if you've done it a couple times. So, the, right. Well, then I was still drinking, and it was the fun time still. It was, there was really no heart, you know, well, I thought. I didn't know I was making enemies left and right. I just didn't know. I was in a fog about that, but I was still working out, still being healthy. My hangovers weren't that bad. I have a little headache, but that's not really a hangover, is it? It's just a little headache. Well, then fast forward. Anyway, she finally got enough. Found someone else. I mean, after 13 years, I was clueless. I was just absolutely clueless. Back up again. I got into the cop stuff again. There was a couple of deputies who got killed, and I got following that manhunt after Deputy Phelps got killed. I remember that, and I thought, they need me. They need my services. What am I doing delivering packages? But it was on the best job. Every day I delivered 10 or 12 packages. And I went to national parks, Sequoia Kings Canyon National Park. That was my job. I got to go fishing and hiking in my breaks and lunch hour. I left that on purpose to go back as a 45-year-old rookie and pat down junkies and hookers at 3 a.m. in the morning in Belmont in Fresno. That's a really good decision. So, that's living. That's living. So then, okay, then the drinking is in high gear. And for me again, where the job comes in, I can't be an alcoholic because I see alcoholics every day. They're living in a box in the Oleanders in the middle of 99. Or they're, you know, that was my definition. I would arrest these guys. And I come back and say, I can't believe this guy has done, you know, he's living in a box, he's got crap on him, piss on him, puke on him, and he's told me he doesn't have enough problem with alcohol. I said, can you believe that? Said W number 3. And she's like, very non-confrontational. No, I can't believe it. And she's making exit plans. Like, so, all that in the fog, and then when she leaves, I had broken my knee. I was laid up. And she tells me, we sold the house up and moved up to Squaw Valley. And signed the papers of the house. Said, I'm going to be leaving tonight. Okay, you want your mom's? No, I'll be gone. Okay. When are you coming back? Said, I'm leaving. I know. You said you're leaving. When are you coming back? He said, I'm leaving you. I'm like, really? When W number two left, she waited until I was out of town at least. And I came back to a completely empty apartment, except she left the cat and telephone. So I knew she had gone. So this caught me way off guard. And then if I wasn't drinking enough, whoa. You know, I thought, I got to just drink myself into oblivion. But then I thought, AA. I heard someone say AA. So I went to the nearest meeting to save the marriage. Not a good reason to go. So that was my first time. Because some of you remember me from, and Rick said tonight, your first time through. So I was just in so quick. I don't think you remember that. I was in it before. Yeah. When I went to get her back, she was so far gone. So then I went to just slow down, to drink like a gentleman. So about a year and a half ago, or into the night, back up again. Somewhere along the line, I met this, when someone say W number four, like, you can't be the love of your life. You've already had three of them. You know, soulmate number four. Literally, the minute I laid eyes on, I mean, we met, and it was way different than anything I ever imagined could ever happen. And it's, but I was still drinking and lying. Because she, when we got talking, she said, "Are you married?" "Oh, no." "Well, it just wasn't final yet. So it's not really, like, I'm not really married." But so later on, she goes, "You were married. You said you weren't married." And that was, "Geez, you lied to me." "So?" "I'm also breathing." So for me, to lie was the same as breathing or drinking water at that point. So my days of watching The Lone Ranger had long faded. You know, truth, justice, the American way, and honor and dignity and loyalty. Things that I'd taken these oaths, and when I took them, it meant a lot to me. And I had let them become nothing. And just to lie, it didn't mean anything to me. And so now, and one of my quests is to regain integrity and honor. I don't know if I'll ever get there, but it, back up again. Okay, so I met this young lady, and so I thought, we can have a few drinks together. And that quickly melted into, she saw the most, more than all the W3, the other three had seen put together, was heaped on her. The worst of what alcoholism can bring. You guys know. And so I found myself back in the program. I won't say for the right reason, but there was nowhere else to go. It was like the knot at the end of the rope hanging over the shark pit. I knew I couldn't drink again. And I was like, I didn't know how I was going to live without drinking. God almighty, and just hanging there. So I started going to a bunch of meetings, and she was kind of hanging out to see what would happen, but I couldn't focus on that this time. I just had to go. But I had started the steps and got to step four, and just got, I froze. First time I looked in the mirror and I saw this thing I had become. This lying, cheating hunk of crap that I had become. What I had sworn to fight, I'd become. I went to a meeting on Caldwell, one of the Nazarene, not the Methodist Church, I think, whichever one. And my sponsor was there. After the meeting, he says, "Do you have a sponsor? Are you doing the steps? Because you don't look like it." And I was, you see those cartoons where the guy is red and smoke's coming out? And it was like that. He said, "You need to come to my house and we're going to do the steps." I said, "But I'm over it." He said, "No, you're not. You're not close to doing the steps." So whoever the sponsor was, I don't know, for you, for me, I mean, the man saved my life. I mean, sat me down, slowed me down. Instead of this manic, going back and forth, crazy talking idiot, me an idiot, stop. I think we just had a couple of just stop. "Can you do that?" "Yeah, I can't remember. Shut up. I don't know if you use the word shut up, but that's it sunk in. We got to start at step one." And we went through the steps and we were very diligent. And then after a while, I couldn't wait to the next meeting with him. And I'd do a bunch of meetings in between. I was getting excited. I grew up Catholic, and then got mad at God, hated God, didn't believe in God. Went back to the born again Protestant churches and doing cartwheels down the aisle, and you know, went to Quaker meetings and stood there and stand there. Yeah, I'll try it all along, you know. But I finally found a real connection with the spirit of the universe, J.C. puts it, with the one God. Whatever you want to call him, for me, just the one true God, the creator. And this program put me in touch with him or her, this one God. And that allows me now, again, you know what? I'm getting excited. But because it saved my life. And I do this every morning when I get up. I reset the thing, and I do my, it's a standard set of prayers that we've done at our Friday morning meeting, which I miss so bad. But every day, you know, of course the readings change every day, but the same format. But I slow down and I stop, and I take in what's around me. And it's a lot of beauty in this earth. And I know somewhere someone's getting robbed, someone's getting, you name it, what humans do to each other. It's going on. There's nothing we can do about it. There's nothing I can do about it. This white knight I thought I was on this charge is going to go on forever. It's always going on. But all I can do is take care of this one little corner. And all I can do is give my life over to this God of the universe every morning. And just worry about the remainder of that day to stay sober and enjoy all the gifts that are around us. And right now, we've got 5 kids between us, 5.5 grandkids, and we've, some of you have been blessed. Just to sit at the bird feeder, we'll sit out there and do our readings outside and watch the hummingbirds and the birds and get lost in that. And then she'll remind me, we got work to do. We still have, you know, projects, though. And we're able to reach out and to help other people. Right now, one of her nieces is going through some hellacious times. And we're both able to reach out and try to help. Instead of being the burden and being the, God, Uncle Bobby's coming, or God, you know, Bob's coming to town. When I go back to Indiana, you know, it's not good. I mean, one of the things, you can make your amends, but if I want to see you once a year, forever pigeonholed like that a-hole out in California. But I give that up, too. Like, I can't change that perception. I can only deal with today, and today's been pretty good. I think one of our friends, Mike, in a money group says, fellas, it's 9:23 home. I haven't drank today, and if I get up and do the same thing tomorrow, I got a pretty good chance of staying sober that day. And that's what I do. It's not rocket science for me, because becoming a movie watcher, my life has kind of become, with all the stress and the alcohol and the trying to keep track of which wife was there and which in-laws, it's become that movie 50 First Dates. Like, have we been here before? Or was that in a movie? And she'll say, no, we've been here. Like, oh, God. No, I forget a lot of things, and I would be worried about it, except I've got a guide. She'll put my name in directions, how to get home. But it's a place I want to go to. And like before, I used to buy into that most accidents occur within 5 miles radius of home. And so on the other marriages, I make sure I was at least 5 miles away from home. Now I make sure I'm home. It's a good place to be. So if you get anything out of this,
is to do the steps. Because the first time I came through, for me it was, if you're not doing the steps, man, get to them. Get to them now, because that's the medicine. That's the medicine for this deadly disease that, if left unchecked, will kill us. It'll kill us, put us in the nut house, in jail. That's what it's going to do. That's what, there's no other place to go. And I don't think we want to be there. So if you're not doing the steps, please find your nearest sponsor, someone preferably who's done the steps before themselves, and get to them. And then when you get to step 12, like JC said, find the next guy and pass that on. Because, man, that will really make you open the book, taking someone else to the steps. So, I think that's all I got. I'm Robert, alcoholic.